Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah. Relax. Yeah. Take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay? You got me?
Yeah.
Like, loosen a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can even play the whole season. There's no game suspension, none of that. All right?
Yeah.
I may even give you some money. All right? I don't want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
Another year, baby.
Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're going to find out how far we can push ourselves.
Fans, welcome to another episode of Cat Scratch Radio. I'm Jackson, your host, here to talk Carolina Panthers football yet again, and we're here to recap the 2017 draft, something we build up to after several months of planning and evaluations and mock drafts and, you know, so much of all that till we get sick of it. We finally have the draft, and what a draft it was. I'll tell you, I don't recall ever being four picks in, five, then five picks, and going, wow, this is great. I have to admit, I just had a hard time believing we were going to take McCaffrey, but I should have seen the, I guess we're going to learn from this one. Maybe Dave will be, I don't know, it seems like he was awful predictable. And I say that because you'll recall, I guess a week ago, I put up a post about a prop bet. And, if Vegas is making prop bets on whether you're going to pick a player or not, I got a feeling they know something that most of us don't. Some people knew McCaffrey was heavily on the radar. It may have been started by Joe Pearson, but he just never didn't seem like the kind of player we would draft. But as several people have pointed out, Dave gave some clues to that regard and some of his pre-draft pressers about, you know, getting players that are flexible and interchangeable and, you know, that have multi-skilled. And, since drafting him, I've looked at a lot of highlight videos, and it's just gotten me excited. The kid is just deadly in the open field. His moves, his vision, his ability to use his blocks, his patience, great hands. I'm excited, and that's just talking about McCaffrey. So we got that to talk about. We ended up with seven draft picks and only five UDFAs, though I think we got some guys coming in for tryouts. I don't know, there might be more now. I hadn't really been tracking that too much, unlike years past on the whole UDFA. I saw we got Ben Bulware, which since we didn't draft a linebacker, there's certainly room on the roster for one. So he may have moved right into the perfect spot for him. So we're certainly going to talk about all the picks. We even got a little rosterbation to talk about. The 12-game starter, Trey Boston, getting cut just today. That was a surprise. It certainly was for me. I thought they'd at least bring him into camp, but I think the writing was on the wall, and he even said that himself, that, I think it was apparent to us, as many of the fans, that they only played Boston when they had to, and they really were looking to upgrade the position. And the guy just made too many mistakes. He was just a liability at times, very inconsistent. Not that he didn't make some good plays in his, you know, here and there. He certainly did. But his time in Carolina is finished. Trey Boston. So we cut a couple other guys. So, I don't know. Let's see. I believe I got Josh on the line.
What's going on?
Hey, Josh. How's it going, man?
Not much. I didn't get a chance to watch all the drafts last week, so I've been catching up, seeing what's going on.
This might be the first one that I actually sat through the whole damn thing. I've just in the past I've gotten so bored with it I couldn't do it. But I was kind of resigned.
We were at Myrtle
this
Beach.
Time. Yeah. Oh yeah.
We were at the beach. And I was just kept looking at my phone, but usually I kind of, you know, watch it pretty thoroughly, but this time I didn't. So I was keeping up with CSR here and there, see what was going on. Did you guys have a call during that time?
We did, but it totally bombed. Nobody called in except one guy that I didn't recognize. Yeah, and I was going to do it from the bar that I was at, and it was just it was a lot more noisier than I thought it would be, and I bailed on it after like 15 minutes of waiting for somebody to join in. I made the mistake of doing it right at the start of the draft rather than at our pick or even after our pick, and I think probably a lot of people were just still distracted and I don't know. It just totally bombed. I was like not into it after 10 minutes. I was like, okay, I'm going to bail out on this.
You're going to bail out. I was pretty excited with the McCaffrey pick. I was hoping they would pick O.J. Howard. I think a lot of people were, but, you know, seeing the guy, you know, McCaffrey just, he's the type, you get the ball in his hands and you just let him go to work. He's just got that take it to the house mentality anytime he gets it in his hands. But the dude can catch the ball like a receiver.
30 touches a game at Stanford. 30 touches a game?
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of work for a kid. But
his hands are like, he's built like a, I mean, he's got receiver type hands. I mean,
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was one comment from one of the scouting reports. It was a video that I saw. And the guy said, the ball never touched the ground the whole time. Anytime the ball went to McCaffrey, he caught it.
Like, he caught it,
you know,
yeah.
Didn't drop a single pass the whole time. You know, unless it was, you know, wasn't catchable. But, and his foot speed and his ability to cut. I mean, I saw some moves in some of those highlights where I was just amazed. And, you know, you're used to seeing running backs, you know, juke some people. But, I mean, on those kickoffs and a couple of those, he's coming around and you got this guy, all right, that guy's going to tackle him, and the guy doesn't even lay a hand on him. He gets juked so bad. It's just, God, he... Talk about putting your foot in the ground and turning on a dime, man.
I just hope, I don't know, you might be like me. Are you kind of a little, I'm not really worried, but I just hope that they use him right. You know, they're going to have to tweak the offense a little bit.
Well, you know, we're going to see what Mike Shula is made of now. You know, I do have to admit, he altered the offense to fit Cam. And, I don't know if he just got lucky with that, but, you know, it kind of ran its course. Now he's got some really different weapons that he's not used to, you know, writing a game plan around. And,
right.
And why would you not game plan, you know, write a game plan around McCaffrey at this point? You know, so, you know, you use McCaffrey to slash and gash them here and there and get them to where they're watching him, and then you know, then you got the weapons down the field and Olsen and KB and whatnot. So, you know, it's
it'll be
it's going to be interesting to see what he comes up with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Josh. I got a bunch of people on the line this week. I don't feel so bad now. After having a total fiasco of a show Thursday night. Let's see. I see Durst on the line. I'll get to you just in a second there, John. Brian. What's up, Brian?
Hey, what's up, Jax?
Oh, I see I got Goose Creek out there, too. Hold on, GC. I'll get to you in a minute. Well, what do you think, Brian? You think the McCaffrey pick?
Well, I would have thought that he may have been a gimmicky player up until Gettleman also selected Curtis Samuel. So I think that Carolina is really trying to make a big change in their offensive personnel and offensive playbook with this draft. It really seems like Carolina is trying to move forward and bring a more, not to say traditional per se, but more diverse offense to the league. Because now Carolina has Jonathan Stewart, the traditional power runner, Christian McCaffrey, who can run the power attack, but is probably stronger as a 5 to 10 run, 8 to 10 target player, and Curtis Samuel is a good mix-up too. So I think that this is really a change for Carolina in the sense that they're going to try to bring something different to the table this year, and I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because it's just not an offense that it's going to have to be an offense that we haven't seen. I'm not sure Carolina, you know, if they're trying to turn it into something like what New England runs and what they won that Super Bowl with last year, that would be very different than what we've seen in Carolina. Maybe even since the franchise started, because I really can't, you know, maybe back when Seifert was here, we tried to run that kind of offense. It just didn't work.
And the nice thing about it is you still have Jonathan Stewart and you still have Cam Newton who present the power rushing attack option, but you put Jonathan Stewart back there with just to give you a hypothetical, you put Jonathan Stewart back there with McCaffrey and you got Curtis Samuel in the slot. All three of those guys are rushing, actually, including Cam, that's 4 different rushing threats. So it really makes a defense have to rely on its keys and rely on its reads. Where last year was more so, okay, load the box up and make Carolina throw the ball. Now, any one of those 4 guys could have the ball, and it could be a passing play, it could be a power rushing play, it could be a speed rushing play. So it's really interesting, and I'm glad that Gettleman is giving Shula some pieces where he can really be creative, because we know he can be. Despite how chided he is in our face or in our fan base,
mm-hmm.
He's a very creative playmaker. So I'm really excited to see what he has to do with those guys. Because you put McCaffrey, Samuel, Stewart, and Cam in the backfield or within the backfield. You got the outside receivers, Kelvin Benjamin, Funchess, possibly Greg Olsen. There's a lot of things you can do with that. So
yeah.
It's going to cause problems for defenses. And this draft makes it seem like Carolina's just looking for those guys who can make mismatches happen.
Yeah. And you already brought up the second pick of Chris Samuel, and he's a similar player to McCaffrey. Size and build and ability, you know, just not quite, you know, as shifty and you know, doesn't have quite the instincts, nor the hands, I guess, either. I think that was the biggest knock on Samuel is his hands. He can be a little inconsistent there. But, you know, it says that, hey, we're going to get both these players so that when we game plan, no matter what happens, I got a couple guys I can switch in and out that can run the same play.
Yeah, and it's really a good way to have a backup plan for injury because obviously the guys are very similar in their skill sets. Samuel's a bit faster McCaffrey is obviously shiftier, more of a power runner, all that stuff. He's more of a complete running back, well, more of a complete player in the sense that he can power run, speed run,
yeah.
receive. But Samuel presents a skill set which includes a much faster game to it. He's a guy who can take it to the house probably better than McCaffrey can, to be honest. I mean, McCaffrey's a home run hitter, don't get me wrong, but Samuel's speed with the ball is insane. Like, I've been watching his highlights, and when he gets some open space, he goes a lot faster than McCaffrey. So, instead of having the situation where it's like, okay, we got Jonathan Stewart, oh, now he's injured, now we have to do a committee play, we got McCaffrey and we got Samuel. So those two guys will definitely be used in the same game plan, but if McCaffrey or Samuel goes down, we know that the other guy can fill in. So it gives you some depth along with those extra playmakers.
Yep. Yeah, at first it was a real head-scratcher of a pick. You know, because like, wow, why'd they take? But then you realize that, well, I mean, when you're going to change your offense, you better have some depth at that position that's so critical to revolving that offense around. So, again, at first for me, it was a bit of a head-scratcher, but then it's like, all right.
I really had
guys...
to do some thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yep.
I was just saying, I had to do some thinking about it. Like, at first I was like, when I was sitting there on Friday night, because I was out for a convention here in Lancaster, and I saw the pick, and I was like, well, that's interesting. And, like, at first I was very puzzled by it, but I had to think about it a little bit. But now I'm like, my thoughts on it are very simple. Like, you have – the more playmakers you have for Cam Newton, like, those guys don't have to be used in a mutually exclusive way. They can all be – they can both be used in the same playbook, but in the same plays as well. But if one of them goes down or if one of them gets injured, you have a guy who has a similar skill set. So you're right in that sense that having that depth is good. But really, what it boils down to is when the whole team is healthy, you have two different guys along with Cam Newton who does the same thing who create mismatches. And there aren't a lot of defenses in the NFL that field linebackers who can cover that, or at least two linebackers who can cover that. So it's really good for Carolina because they can run their power scheme offense with the running between the tackles and whatnot. And teams either have to put out their 4-3 or their 3-4 base personnel, or they have to put out nickel personnel. So you either get burned in the passing game or you get burned in the running game. So to me, if it's schemed perfectly, you have a mismatch every down with those two guys on the field.
Yep. Yeah, I love it. All right, well, I got to give a hat tip to old Durst. He's on the line. And congratulations. For those of you that might have read his post, that he got an 87 out of 100 of the top 100. It even did better than Mike Mayock and the old Badger himself, Kuiper and Dan Kadar. Would you come in, Durst? Something like fifth overall, or?
No. Oh, it's just 12th, and it's like,
12th,
you know.
12th, that's right.
Just 12th. Just 12th.
There's no ribbon for 12th place. No medal for 12th place, man.
No medal for 12th place. Hey, you get a lot of attaboys from us. Did they tell you how many entries there were?
You know, they did not. They post the top 50. I have no idea how many people, you know, really entered. But, I am kind of – it is cool that I, you know, beat some of the real heavyweights, you know, that do this kind of for a living. I should get paid for it. But, I was hoping for a little – well, you know, as I started, you know, we were getting to about the 90th pick. I only had you know, I mean, I guess I'd only missed maybe like seven or so at that point, and so I was getting pretty excited, like, hey, I could actually win this thing, and my score of 87, actually, that same score won it the year before, so, you know, at that point, I know how many I'm getting right, but I don't know how many other people are getting right. So it wasn't until the next day that I found out I was only in 12th place because I actually thought that maybe I had a, you know, top three finish or something like that. But anyway, it was still fun.
No doubt.
I mean, that's impressive compared to Mel Kiper and his supposed all-knowing draft boards. This is the same guy who said that Jimmy Clausen would be a great quarterback or he'd quit this year. So, you know, I'm really impressed with that, Durst. Like, reading that post, I was genuinely impressed. And obviously, if you heard the clapping, that was me clapping for you because that's really good, dude. Like, that's something to hang your hat on. The fact that you evaluated, you did your work, and you put your grind work in.
That's some clapping.
You managed to be more accurate than the guys who are paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for their opinions that were wrong compared to yours. So I'm glad that you're part of CSR. I really am.
And it's
I appreciate it.
And the contest is you pick the top 100, and it's not whether those 100 get picked in the draft. It's whether they get picked in the top 100, right? So you stop at pick number 100 and count them up, right? I mean, that seems hard. You only missed 13.
yeah, it is. And it is also kind of a unique contest because let's just say if I put Myles Garrett number 99, I'd still get that right. You know,
yeah.
So it's not that you're trying necessarily to get them in order, which
right.
You know, I didn't even – they also have a mock draft contest, but I didn't even enter that and – you know, I guess I've tried so many times that my hat on that, and you get all these trades, and you know, it just never really works out. But the top 100, you know, it's more of a you know, it's more of a big board, which has kind of been my thing all along. You know, trying to create the big board, and so
yeah,
it's been a lot of fun for me.
Well done, man. That's how you make a name for yourself, right there. I'm sure that took notice. Actually, I'll have to drop a note to the mothership on that just to brag on you a little bit there. So well done. I read that and I was like, holy shit, you did pretty damn good. So I guess you're listening. You know, how do you feel about the draft class? You know, we've kind of talked about McCaffrey and Samuel. Anyone else there you think we got some value?
Well, yeah, personally, I was kind of a fan of Taylor Moten, you know, the right tackle prospect. Yeah, he's somebody I didn't really catch on until later, you know, just playing at Western Michigan. I was trying to scout out Corey Davis, the wide receiver, and end up, you know, Taylor Moten just caught my eye. You know, he had some rough moments against T.J. Watt, you know, from Wisconsin, J.J. Watt's brother, but he also had some good plays against him, and so I thought that performance solidified him as a you know, top 100 guy, but toward the end I had him as my offensive tackle number 4, which, you know, getting him at the end of the second round is, you know, pretty good value.
Yeah,
I think he's got a pretty good chance of beating out Darrell Williams this year. It may not happen, you know, in mini camp or training camp, but I mean, you know, it may happen, you know, mid season or somewhere. Yeah, that's all assuming that Michael O'Hur doesn't end up, you know, making it back from his concussion. If he does, then we have the question about whether or not he's going to be a swing tackle, backup left tackle, or competing at right tackle. Deshaun Hall was the guy I was impressed by. Yeah, I think the people who don't like him say that, you know, that all the offensive coordinators are trying to scheme against Myles Garrett, and so, you know, Deshaun Hall had sort of an open field to work with, but I thought he did well, and Garrett was hurt a lot of these games, and I think he even missed a game where you know, Hall ended up picking up the slack a little bit. Probably the guy I like the most in terms of a, you know, mid round or later round would be Corn Elder, who's just a feisty, scrappy, you know, he's you know, I guess he's going to end up competing with Captain. And I'm not so sure he's going to beat him out this year, but maybe in 2018 he might end up being a starting slot. I didn't really think he was necessarily what Gettleman wanted in a corner because of you know, the length he drafted in 2016. But But then again, Sanchez wasn't a really big guy either, and he's captain. So,
yeah.
So anyway, the last couple of guys, Oh yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, can I just point out? So Dallas, when they picked Taco Charlton, tweeted out their social media team tweeted out a bunch of taco emojis. So when Carolina picked Corn Elders, they tweeted out a bunch of corn emojis, and I found that to be freaking hilarious. Just saying.
I didn't see that.
I
love
that.
It.
Speaking of corn, it's pretty funny that I saw on the internet. So we play Green Bay this year. It's going to be like corn on the cob.
That's well played as well. I like that. Corn on the cob. If he has a kid, he name it Sweet Baby Corn. Oh, those jokes just write themselves. You've probably heard them all. Hey, but we did get our whole who was that pick? That's the sixth rounder. This Alex Armas. Have you heard of him? Dirt?
I had never heard of this guy. No.
Hadn't heard of him either. He had some pretty good film, though. I must say, he's a solid blocker. That's what he looks like. He's going to be the lead blocker for us. I don't know, Dirk.
Yeah, I
think
he made
the.
After he was drafted, I kind of looked into some things. I think he made all conference at both tight end and defensive end. And then I guess, the theory is going to be that he's going to play fullback.
The new Richie Brockle, new and improved.
Well, that's not going to be that hard. So I guess, then the big news is, I have to, I got to get Goose Creek on the line for this discussion. Your favorite, Goose, Trey Boston, he got cut.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I know you had to be like, thank God, it's about time.
I am. I was not one of his fans.
Well, we didn't draft a safety, so what do you think the plan is there? Is it time for Dean Marlowe or what?
I guess they must like Bletchin there.
That's what I said in the comment thread earlier today, was because I pulled up the list of safeties, and Bletchin was tagged as a linebacker last year because remember
right,
when he had to fill in right there at the end of the season – because we had nobody else, he played pretty well at safety.
And they told him to lose weight, get ready to play there. And they moved him on their depth chart to safety.
Yep.
At the end of the season.
Yep, that's exactly so. He lost some weight.
I have a few retorts to that. I have a couple retorts to that. Yeah, Bletchin, obviously, he's going to get his shot at safety, but I think that we're going to see a little bit of Jeremy Cash there at safety just because now he has an opportunity to shine without the depth that the team thought they had before. I would really like to see what Dean Marlowe has, obviously, because the team's helping around, but one other thing that a lot of people haven't considered is Daryl Worley was actually somebody who got some snaps as a safety last year in the offseason. So, not to say he's going to be a safety or a starting safety, but he's definitely a good reserve safety. So, what I think happened was Carolina just had enough of Trey Boston, and they didn't, obviously, Gettleman or Rivera, whoever, didn't think he was going to improve anymore. So, they think that what they have there now is good. So, Adams is obviously a starter, but I think that you got Worley may play some double duty back there if there's an injury that happens, and obviously, Dean Marlowe might actually get a shot this year. I get where you're coming from with Bleschen, but I still think he's going to end up being a practice squad / 53-man roster cut towards the end of the year. And just because he just didn't do a whole lot in the preseason and never really, like, moved up the roster or moved up to 53. They're going to give him a shot in the preseason and the offseason, obviously. But I just think that Cash, Marlowe, those are the two guys we should watch for safety right now.
Well, I'd even written in the thread on that they either like Bletchin or else they were going to use Worley. So I agree with you.
He's got the skill set to play safety. He's a physical run tackler. He's got the size. We obviously know he has the ball skills. So he could be very well suited as safety. And obviously we know Captain Monroe can play on the outside if need be. And who knows what we got with Corn Elders. It sounds like Corn's got the instincts and the attack ability / tackling ability to play nickel corner for Carolina and do well. So, you know, there's a lot of possibilities there with the guys they got.
Yep. So, and we also had a patented Dave Gettleman trade up, only one, though. And I didn't think it was a bad trade just to give up the fourth rounder to move up as much as we did from 90, moved up 22 spots in the third from 98 to 77. Got that pass rusher. So I'm excited to see what Hall can do. His tape looks good to me, too. I mean, he looks like a solid second-round pick. So to get him in the third, I love it. I was just like, wow, this draft's going well. This feels weird.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because we talked about it before the draft, and I was a big fan for Forrest Lamp. And there he was in the second round, and I was wishing they'd use that fourth or fifth round pick because it got closer to us to move up the three spots and grab him rather than make the pick for Curtis Samuels.
There was a lot of good players on the board when we picked him, so you're right.
I didn't have a good feel for Samuels because I remember when he came out of high school, I mean, he was heavily recruited. And then he went to Ohio State, and he disappeared for 2 years. So he really only had one good year this last year. So I just thought he'd been unproductive. And I said that on the thread, and Doc Sport came back and said, well, if you look at the people in front of him, he just couldn't break through. And that made a little more sense to me, you know, because I really wasn't happy with the pick, but I'm a little more open-minded about it now.
Well, the other thing to consider with Lamp was that he was highly considered, and Durst, feel free to make me sound stupid on this, but from what I gathered from Lamp is that he was more of a tackle but projects better to be a guard in the NFL type player. And if Gettleman feels that he should re-sign Trey Turner or Andrew Norwell, why would you take a guy like that when you have – and people forget about this. In fact, I forget about it almost on a daily basis. But Amini Silatolu is still a Carolina Panther. And while he was never great, he's still good depth because he can play tackle in a pinch and he can play guard. So why would you take a high pick on someone like Lamp if you intend to re-sign Turner and Norwell?
Week. And my feeling is, Lamp could be backup. He would be depth at both tackles, both guards. He could step in for Norwood if we lose him, or Norwell, excuse me. But the main thing is he will be an all-pro center. He's going to end up being center, and he will be an all-pro center when he moves there. And he would be the one to be taken over for Ryan Khalil when he left.
But do you invest the high – second round pick on a guy like that, or do you take Curtis Samuel, who can help your offense right away?
Well, I would. When you're talking about the depth to the middle, and you have depth there, and then he steps right in and takes your Pro Bowl center's place with Pro Bowl performance. That's the way I was looking at it. And he'd have time to break in.
Go ahead. Finish your thought. Sorry.
Well, that was it. I would, yes. Because we have wide receivers coming up later that could do the same thing, in my opinion, that Samuels was, especially have more experience with the route running, since he was more of a back to me. Like I said, I'm trying to be open-minded about it. I think Curtis Samuels, from what I've seen, he's one of those guys that when he's playing on as a wide receiver, you need to hit him quick, hit him with a slant, hit him with a quick shot, let him catch the ball running and keep running. But I don't think he's run the deep routes where he's getting separation.
He has. Samuel is actually, he was on pace for, if I believe I read this right last year, he was on pace to have more than 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in the 2016 season. Really what I think of what it boils down to is that you get a guy that can contribute right away alongside Christian McCaffrey. Like, he's not going to just be a backup to Christian McCaffrey. He's going to be a complement to Christian McCaffrey and Jonathan Stewart and Cam Newton. So what I see in Samuel is a more of a Ted Ginn replacement, in the sense that he's got the speed, he's got decent hands. Like, a lot of people knocked his hands, but when I was watching film about him, for him, the passes that were catchable or would have been like an NFL definable word as catchable, like a thrown pass in the NFL where it would be catchable, he caught them. It was just he had a couple bad passes on the national TV and the national games, but for the most part, from what I saw of him watching his film, he's a good receiver, and he's got a lot of good speed, and he's got a lot of versatility for Carolina. So I think that a guy like that would be more beneficial right now than a guy who could potentially back up everybody. And you're right. I argued this point months ago. Having a guy who can back up both of your tackle positions is a really good thing, because you need a swing tackle. You need somebody who can fill in an injury, because you never know when injury's going to happen. It's not something you can plan for. So I agree with that mentality, and I hope that that Taylor Moton from the end of the second round ends up being that guy. But I think that Samuel's going to end up being a high-impact player from day one for Carolina.
I hope you're right. I saw him more as a bird replacement. I see him as taking the quick hits and moving the chains a little bit. But what I saw also of him was being the reverse guy, or the end-around guy, along with the short, quick hits.
He made a couple of catches in the end zone like a regular wide receiver, where I was like, wow. In the film tape that I saw. But, like I said, Durst, feel free to dispute me if you'd like.
Well, first thing, you're completely correct. He was on pace at one point, pretty late in the season, to have over 1,000 yards rushing and receiving. And if he had that, I mean, I think it would have been even a little bit of Heisman talk. It's just something magical about having that kind of stat that maybe gets more attention. Goose Creek, I mean, do keep in mind, Ohio State, I think, felt they kind of owed Braxton Miller that spot, and I think Samuel is further, during the season, I felt that Samuel was further along than Braxton Miller was, playing that sort of, hybrid Percy Harvin position. But I think that, for the most part, they had to give Braxton something, kind of throw him a bone, because of what a great great player he was, and I guess for those that are listening to it that don't know, I mean, Braxton Miller was a two-time Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year at quarterback, hurt his shoulder, and then ended up being relegated to this sort of H-back role where where Cardale Jones and T.J. Barrett end up being, you know, sort of sharing the quarterback position for a couple years. So, I think Samuel didn't have a chance to shine until last year, and I think he's shown pretty well considering that type of offense and considering the quarterback he had thrown to him. He was the third fastest player at the combine this year. So, you know, of course, when it comes to the combine, everybody wants to talk about John Ross, but Samuel was the fastest running back, the second fastest wide receiver, and the third fastest overall. So he's a heck of a talent. He just is nowhere near as polished, nowhere near as experienced as Christian McCaffrey.
Well, the first time they hand the ball off to McCaffrey on a wide run, and then they reverse it to Samuel, where take it the other direction on the run, I'll be his biggest fan because he's going to break one.
Yep.
That would be awesome.
I went ahead and opened up the lines. We had a few other callers, so we got John and CP and Bobby on the line too, so welcome, guys. So it's kind of open mic, guys. Let us know what you think.
Hello, Jackson. How are you doing today?
Doing all right.
I just listened to some. I one comment I'd like to make. Even with the players that the Panthers brought in, if the Panthers can turn and hand the ball off to Stewart and McCaffrey and run the ball, they're going to run the ball down people's throat. What all this does is give them the option in those times when they're behind or they can't run the ball, they're going to be able to get the ball out of Cam's hands. But I do believe that with the work of with the offensive linemen and what they brought in, it all still all comes down to the fact that they can turn and run it, they'll run it. This is just an option for a little something else when those times arise.
A little more flexibility. It's true. Definitely true.
But the Panthers are a running team. I do not see them going away from it a great amount if they don't have to. But, you know, like I said, we'll see.
I guess I'll go. I see everybody likes the Curtis Samuel pick. And I hear the talk of, like, Carolina going more towards the New England offense. But to me, it feels more like Green Bay. I think Curtis Samuel can be a poor man's Randall Cobb. That's exactly what I see when I look at him.
I was reading a lot of that today. Yeah, I don't disagree.
I think if, you know, we can work on his hands, we have something great. But like everybody else, my concern is Shula. Yeah, we know he can be creative and all that. But my problem with him is his play calling going to get better at critical decisions? Like, them points in the game where he just calls the wrong play.
I mean, you're not incorrect to question that with Shula, but we've also seen how creative he can be with the limited personnel set, such as those fourth and one passes to Olsen, those fourth and one bootlegs with Cam Newton. Those were the very limited weapons. You know, even in 2015, we had Jericho Cotchery, Ted Ginn, Philly Brown, Johnson Stewart. Like, you don't have those shifty guys who could do a whole lot of different things. So you put the guys like you put those two guys like Samuel and McCaffrey in his hands on fourth down and short. Now you got a whole lot of different options to go with. So I don't disagree with the fact that we should be a little skeptical of Shula, but at the same time I think he'll find a way to work those guys in a way where it'll be really creative and really productive for them.
As long as we don't go back to the John Fox, a punt is a good play sometimes.
And we know Ron Rivera doesn't like that, even with the heavy power personnel that we had for the last 3 years. You know, now we got guys who can catch it, run it on the sweeps, even take it out of the Wildcats. There's a lot of different things you can open up where the defense has to be fundamentally sound and has to really watch their keys, where in the past, at least even last year, they were like, okay, Cam Newton might take the ball or Jonathan Stewart might take the ball. Otherwise, they got to throw it, and who's going to get open for them, you know?
Jackson must have went to feed the dog.
Yeah, I guess I'm warming up to the draft a little bit, or warming up to the, you know, to my, I haven't given an official grade yet, but yeah, at first I thought, well, you know, there was a lot of talent left at certain positions, and you know, kind of felt the redundancy between McCaffrey and Samuel, but I definitely want to give the coaching staff the benefit of the doubt. It seems like they had a true definitive plan here, and you know, I hate to be too premature to give them a C or whatever when you know, we haven't really seen this plan come to full fruition yet. And there's definitely a lot they're going to be able to do with this type of you know, these types of weapons. And
no, I don't disagree. Like, people are complaining about the offensive line talent and whatnot, but you take guys who can run it along the perimeter and run it on short routes and give Cam Newton more options underneath and more options that he can throw to on short passes and short yardage situations, you know, he's going to have some options. And as I brought it up many months ago, we saw some of those concepts with Fozzie Whitaker where it just didn't work out, like him running down the field on a 20 to 25 yard wheel route where the ball didn't make it to him or he dropped it. Or having those screen concepts with Mike Tolbert and Jonathan Stewart, which really shouldn't scare a whole lot of defenses because none of them are super fast, where now you got two guys who are really fast and can definitely catch the ball between the two of them. You know, it just opens up so many different things to this defense and or this offense. And defenses in the NFC South have to adjust to it. And as we know, probably the best defense in the NFC South right now is the Falcons, and they rely mostly on speed, which Carolina still has that power run offensive presence that they can use with guys like McCaffrey and Stewart. So I think Carolina did a lot to really benefit themselves in the near future and the long term.
Yeah, you got me, GC. I had to go handle dogs and kids. But I'm back, yeah. I found it strange, you know, I was sitting here, the Bills are on the clock, I get a phone call, it's a McDermott, he's like, dude, I know you like this Tre'Davious White, should I take him? And I was like, dude, be all over it. He took two of my three picks in the SB Nation mock draft. Old McDermott. Wasn't that weird? They fired that whole crew right after the draft trying to get Brandon Bean. So they're going to be like the Panthers of the North.
Should we call them the White Leopards?
The White Leopards. Snow Leopards, yeah. but, yeah, then they took Zay Jones. But I got both those players at much better value. But I am
it wouldn't little shock me to see Boston end up there.
And probably what pissed me off the most about the draft is the guy that I wanted, O.J. Howard, ended up going to the Bucks. It's like, what the fuck?
I know. Look, we're going to have to admit this. The Bucks offense looks a little dangerous right now.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the Bucks are going to up and coming. They're going to be even better. So, but I'm hoping for a Falcon Super Bowl hangover where they fall to 6-10.
That would be sweet.
Hey, guys, I'm going to cut off right now. Got to head out, but good talking to everybody.
All right, Brian. Appreciate it. Thanks for dialing in, man.
Yep, no problem.
Yep, we'll check in next week. We'll see. Going into our off-season schedule here pretty soon. I haven't heard from Bobby yet.
Hello, can
John.
You hear me?
Oh, there you are.
Hey. The one thing I'm excited about looking at McCaffrey is his vision. When we took Luke Kuechly, it was his, basically back then we were looking, I think Ron Rivera was looking for somebody that could tackle, because that was our problem when he took over. Nobody could tackle. And Luke's instincts have, just been what Luke is. Looking
Dynamite.
At McCaffrey's take, he's almost like Luke on the offensive side. His vision is ridiculous. I think the game, he's able to find holes. He's able to, he's got the cut ability to match that vision. So I think we're going to really be pleasantly surprised by his patience. And, most of our guys just run up to the line and go through the hole. And I think it's going to be pretty exciting to see how his intelligence is going to pay off combined with those feet he has. So I'm just real excited about that. But if you look at the tape, he just sees a whole lot more of the field, I believe, than anybody's going to see. That's just my opinion. That's what I'm seeing.
I'm watching him at the combine right now, and it's just uncanny how sharp and crisp his cuts and how his, those knees are always pumping. And his footwork is just amazing how quickly he turns.
Another thing to do is watch the way he looks away from the ball. After he catches it, he makes a move to the next pylon, and he doesn't turn back until he's ready to catch the ball. When the ball's supposed to be there, then he looks. He doesn't give it away early.
Yeah, I think taking that football intelligence, combined with that cutting ability. I mean, his feet chop and they go straight ahead, and it's going to be real interesting to see him in the open field and if these, how he matches up with NFL players one on one. We got to get him in space.
You saw a lot of his highlight plays were him out in the slot and just abusing, safeties.
Yeah.
Splitting the
That's really advanced stuff when you're not giving away the ball coming in your direction early and that sort of stuff. Not putting your arms up to it, not turning toward the ball early. That's good stuff.
I'm real excited about what they're doing. The Twin Towers just didn't work, and of course we had it on the show, right? I forget who it was who was pushing for us to get Mike Williams a while back, for the separation argument. And evidently we're going to have some good separation now. And I guess we'll just have to see how the KB diet goes, right?
I don't know who was saying somebody made the joke about KB will be at where would the Panthers be in 5 years post, which by the way, just to tell everyone, that was a mandated post by the mothership
I was just like, yeah, that's why I did it. And you know, and you know, all the blogs had something similar that same day. I don't know if it was an advertisement, you know, whatever. But it was just a weird timing. You know, it's like, so right after the draft, we're going to do this future prediction post. It was just weird. So anyway, but I had a lot of people poo-pooing it, and I wanted to tell them why, but I was afraid the mothership would see my comments and say, yeah, it's another one of those sponsored post crap that we always hate to write. But it pays the bills. But, yeah, somebody had said in there, Kelvin Benjamin finishes his third season at left tackle or something like that.
Well, you know, everybody's kind of been down on Funches, but, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, he catches the ball. He can shoot, use his body. Maybe he can't get separation, but
yeah, I think that might be more, and just more opportunity in snaps. And, you know, Cam, eventually he's got to have trust in you, and he's got to be willing to throw the ball that way.
Well, wasn't it a play last year where Kelvin went down and Devin went down, and Devin got wide open, and Ron Rivera was pointing at Devin, and Cam threw it all the way down to Kelvin, and he made this ridiculous catch in the end zone. He was on the left side of the field, I believe. But Devin was wide open, you know, and but anyway. Well, that's all I had to contribute tonight, but it's a great discussion, man. I'm just gonna listen in.
I got you, buddy. Appreciate it. That's Bobby, right?
Yeah, Funches is still a young guy though. I think he was one of the youngest rookies, you know, his rookie year.
Yeah,
you know, I know a lot of people have kind of given up on him, but you know, you're gonna have an adjustment time period. Remember, also his first year or his last year at Michigan was his first year playing wide receiver. He was a tight end before that, so he's still kind of a little bit of a project. And I personally haven't really given up on him yet.
Well, you know, I went to the Green Bay Carolina game 2 years ago, his rookie year. And he flashed in that game. He had a good game that game. But he just didn't back it up.
Yeah. I think if he was called upon, that he could step up and get the job done. If he had to fill the number one role in a game, I think he could do it. I mean, he had a couple games where he caught 7 or 8 balls. Maybe that was the Green Bay game, was the one where he had a lot of catches. I have to look at that.
That's where they were in sort of a shootout toward the end, and he made that big catch down the middle for about 40 yards.
Oh, yeah. Right. I remember that game where we got a lead, and then Rodgers was driving.
Right.
It was a tight game.
It got tight.
Yeah.
Funches made a couple of key plays, and that big pick down the middle, he just went out and got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not worried about Funches. Of course, you know, he's on his third season now. He's got to get something done. Got a little pressure on him.
Well, what do you think is going to happen in the big battle with your Georgia Tech Ramblin' Wreck kicker?
The bomb squad. It's just going to be mayhem kicking battle this September. Yep, or August, I guess. Actually, yep, it's going to be an epic battle. It's probably the number one training camp battle. It's going to be going on.
You don't have anybody you're pulling for, do you, there, Jackson?
No, I'm not favoring anyone in particular. May the best man win. Go Jackets.
May the best Yellow Jacket.
Oh no, Gano, you missed another one. Yeah, and I think why, you know, seriously, you know, some people are like, well, his accuracy, missed 2 of 4 from 50. I want to say he tried a couple long 50s just, you know, right at halftime or something and didn't make them. I mean, he, you know, he's not going to kick a 60-yarder. But I think what they like about him is he's got plenty of leg. He can put it in the end zone if he wants to, but he gets a lot of height on his kicks versus a line drive kicker, which is what you get out of Gano sometimes. He, you know, he pounds it out of the end zone, whereas Butker's kickoffs look more like a field goal attempt. And I think that, you know, what the coaches are looking for these days is a kickoff guy that can put it, land it with lots of height, so, you know, lots of hang time, and then have it land right on the 1 yard line, you know, right around in there, to where the guy's got to take it back, you know, because they get it on the 25-yard line now. So they're,
right,
they want to return, but they want lots of hang time to give their guys plenty of time to get down there, and they want to pin him back inside the 20 like they always have. But there's just more incentive to do it now that it goes out to the 25.
We had an old coach who used to call them mortar shots. They want mortar shots on the kickoff.
Yeah, and that's the kind of kick that he gets because he's tall, he's lanky, got that long leg and on a pivot. So, but, I was always pretty confident with the guy. I mean, not that he didn't miss a field goal every now and again, but, you know, for a college kicker, he was money a couple times from long distance.
I was actually surprised they didn't go ahead and pick kicker on the sixth round pick.
Yeah, everybody wanted that Zane Gonzalez. I kind of wondered why Butker wasn't even considered. You know, when I would look at, you know, potential kickers in the draft, he was never listed. But he was one of 4, I think, invited to the combine. He kind of stood out there.
Carolina didn't go there in the sixth round because they were afraid their defensive end fullback was going to get snatched away
from
them.
Might be gone by then. Yeah.
I'd never heard of him as a fullback. I'd actually heard of him as a defensive end.
I certainly had. That was definitely the who? Damn it. Carolina took them to the sixth round, but they finally did a big who.
That's sort of like they did with Mayo. They picked him and said, you know, he would have been there 2 rounds later. You know, maybe not. But you never know.
Yeah.
Gettleman's always good for one of those a lot earlier than you think, like Silatolu.
Yep. And old Silatolu's back. Back with a vengeance. Maybe he's ready to justify that second round pick we spent on him finally.
Just don't want to see his fat butt on the bicycle again.
I was just going to ask a question a little bit off the subject. Didn't the Falcons last year, didn't they have the best luck of any team in the league as far as, like, injuries, particularly on the offensive line? Basically, they had no one missing game hardly, did they?
That's true.
Yeah, I think, but, I think I heard
that's
that.
That's sort of what happens. Look at us 2 years ago. We didn't have the injury problems that we did last year.
Maybe this will be one of the times that horseshoe falls out of their butt. But also, I was thinking, what kind of percentage do you think that McCaffrey, that you're going to have Stewart court proceedings, have them both in the game at the same time. I'm just thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the awesome plays would be if they, like, fake a screen to Samuel, a wide receiver screen, and then send McCaffrey on, like, a wheel route, you know, up the sideline. And you're gonna freeze all the safeties and linebackers, just not even going to know what to do when, you know, when you have that type of thing coming at you.
They will have a lot of options.
Yeah, I think you're going to see, somebody earlier was saying, we're going to be still a running team, and I agree. But I think more of these runs are going to be, there's going to be a few more jet sweeps and reverses and some of those kind of runs mixed in with the power scheme and probably just, less Cam Newton power runs.
Well, still at this point, you'd have to say, though, that Cam is still in the red zone. Is there a better runner than him? He seems to always get in the end zone.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, keep him, doing his thing when he's, inside the 10 and, the playoffs. But, the rest of the year, probably try to keep some of the hits off of him. And
I think we'll be a run-oriented team, but some of those runs are going to be, they start the run by a short pass to get them the ball, if you know what I mean. An elongated run.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. I'm just saying that the Panthers will, if they can run the ball, they'll run it. But if you can get kicked from having to face an 8-man box, that's a wonderful thing. Makes it much easier. I wonder when the training camp starts, if Benjamin comes in so big, why don't they start working him out tight end, maybe to give him a little incentive to lose a little weight?
I think it's kind of overblown, his whole weight scenario thing. I don't think he's at 280. If anything, his playing weight is, 245? He might be, 260.
Yeah, that's probably it, something like that. I think that's even what Rivera said, that somebody mentioned he was up to 280. He's like, no, he ain't that big. Come on now.
And around this time, we all know players come in overweight around this time of season.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was that big. I mean, he was, 245 in college. I mean, he's just not that kind of, he's not a Ted Ginn kind of wide receiver. He's, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
As far if as he was former, I don't have a little better feeling for that. But, it's almost like they're trying to motivate him.
I hope so. We all know he had that knack coming out of college that, he needed to be pushed. Always didn't play to his potential.
Yeah. What'd y'all think of... What'd y'all think of McDermott trading right up in front of us with the Falcons at 63 to grab Deion Dawkins, the tackle? We took Moton. So I'm just curious if we really would have taken Dawkins or not.
I don't know. And I had to tell one of my friends, because he was all on the conspiracy theory. I was like, who better to know what would we need than our former defensive coordinator? He went up against our team every day in practice. So I'm pretty sure he knew what the offensive weaknesses were. But I found it kind of funny. I was like, that's how you going to do it, Sean? Really?
Well, I thought it was funny. He did the same thing when we got Samuel. He went up right in front of him and got Zay Jones, too, if we were looking at wide receiver. That might have been an option.
Yeah, because I honestly think Zay Jones was the pick.
at 40?
Yeah, I think Zane
or
Jones 64. Was sick, and then
at 40. They took Buffalo took Zay Jones at 37.
That's why they got. That's why I think they jumped in front of us because they knew that's what we were looking at.
That wouldn't surprise me. I can't believe I just realized Dalvin Cook was still on the board. He got picked right after we took Samuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are mad. It's like, oh, see, we could have got Dalvin Cook in second round, but we all know that wasn't a Panthers pick. He wasn't on our radar.
No. Not with his problems off the field. But, yeah, there were a lot of good players on the board there. I'm surprised Joe Mixon got picked so damn early. I mean, I think they could have waited a couple rounds and still got him.
But isn't that the Cincinnati thing to do?
Yeah.
Exactly what I was – what other team but Cincinnati.
Yep. So I'm sitting there watching the Deshaun Hall highlights, senior highlights now. I mean, you know, the dude will lay a hit, that's for sure. He looks the part.
But he was in a group right in that same little area. They had Jordan Willis, they had Basham, and they had Hall. They were all, in my book, they were all rated about the same. And I don't know which one I'd rather have, so I'm just depending on the Panthers to know which one fit us best.
Yeah, I like Carl Lawson better, but, I mean, I think his injury history scared a lot of teams away. Carl Lawson, the edge rusher from Auburn, you know,
right.
He had some – two major injuries that basically wiped away almost two full seasons, and I think that must have scared teams away.
When I saw where the Panthers moved up, I thought they were going to go bash them. But, you know, like I said, Hall was right there at the same spot, so they liked him better. He's a little taller.
Yeah, but he has a great situation. You get to sit behind Charles Johnson and Pep. The one thing I did like about a pick, though, is our defensive line rotation is going pretty nasty. And I think the Boston cut sent a message out today that coaching staff mean business.
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked about the Boston thing. I haven't really chimed in on that yet, but I would have yeah, if we had gotten, you know, Jamal Adams at number 8 or Buda Baker at number 40, yeah, I wouldn't have been shocked at all. But given the fact that we didn't take a single safety, that pretty much shocks me that we got rid of Boston. He's only due like $1 million this year, you know, maybe $1.2 million.
Yeah. You know, I always thought, you know, you still could have kept him at death, but
right.
You know, it's the timing was so weird on that for him to go. You just wonder if he came into the, you know, voluntary camp and did something or said something or copped an attitude or something.
I agree with you because after they cut him, I started looking like did Boston fail a drug test? Did he kill someone or somebody? Like. It was just so odd.
Uh-huh. We got a new caller, somebody we haven't heard from in a while, True Thought. What's up, man?
Oh, wow. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Welcome back.
Hey, man. Yeah, it's been kind of a wild, crazy year. Things within the personal life and then also just on the college football end, but kicking back in on the Panthers right here as the draft season tails off.
All right. What did you think of the Panthers draft?
I'm kind of like a couple of you guys. My original hope was O.J. Howard at 8. and I knew it was going to be a coin flip between that and McCaffrey. So I really didn't like seeing Howard slip all the way down to the Bucks at 19. So we're going to see over the next 4 or 5 years how that pans out. The more I started looking at McCaffrey, I'm starting to warm up to the pick more than I was. A lot of what I see, we may not really be changing our offense that much because a lot of what Mike Tolbert was doing or should have had Tolbert doing could be a lot of what McCaffrey does, except you're just changing out what was supposed to be powerful speed. And I saw that in a couple of clips, just from plays from this past year and then from the last couple of years, and it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, huh. So we'll just have to wait and see. My biggest concern with McCaffrey mainly was his weight, being 202 pounds. As a every down back, obviously he's not going to be an every down back immediately, and he's only 20 years old. He'll be 21, I think, in July. So you know, hopefully that gets alleviated. But in terms of overall skill set, McCaffrey's definitely a top-tier talent. So we're going to see there. Not really sure about Samuel yet. We'll find out, I guess, as training camp hits. Probably the main area that I hope that we really see a step up is at that right tackle position. And so I think it's going to be a battle between Darrell Williams and Taylor Moten. And right now, I would suspect that Williams as the incumbent probably has the upper hand with 2 years' experience. And I like what I saw Darrell Williams at the end. But everything we want to do on offense is really predicated around being able to run off of at least one side of the ball, and it's more likely going to be the right side, similar to the way we were with Jeff Otaw in 08. We can do that, then you can make almost just about any changes we want to the offense. But the key is you just got to be able to run the ball at some point when you want to run, and then base your play action, your misdirection, you know, gadget plays, whatever you want to do off of that. Also like the Corn Elder pick in the 5th round at the nickel. Somebody get the feeling he's just going to end up being a better nickel than Captain Merlin coming back. I thought that was an overpay. But I really like the Corn Elder pick. Like the competition with Arma and I guess Daryl Young now. At fullback, David Johnson got cut. And Jackson, I guess we'll see what your kicker does against Gano. But all in all, I think we did well with the draft, given needs and talent. We will see.
All right. Somebody needs to change the battery in their fire alarm. Smoke detector.
Whoa.
I don't know who that is. Well, that's cool, man. Appreciate you dialing in. I got
no problem,
else.
Man.
I do. I got one more caller. Area code 980-267. You've called before, but I didn't put a name to it. If you want to join the call, you are on the line. Area code 980-267. Maybe that's why I didn't put a name to it. He who shall not be named. All right, no worries, man. You can keep listening. Appreciate it.
Something for you, Jackson.
Well,
what you think about 6 tight ends going in the first 100 picks?
Wasn't that crazy?
And 3 in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever remember that.
We might be lucky to get 1 in drafts past. So that was strange. not to see a tackle go in the top 15. first tackle? Yep. Was it Ramczyk?
Bowles. Garrett Bowles at 20.
Bowles out of, yeah.
Bowles to Dallas. The 20, right?
20. Yeah,
went to
Broncos. Broncos at 20. Yep. You're right.
Yeah. He and his son on the stage for the draft. Yeah.
So I was watching the draft with a good friend of mine who's a Bears fan. Of course, you know, just about the time it kicks off, and he turns to me and he goes, "Well, let's see how the Bears can screw up this draft." We didn't have to wait long. He's just like, why do I do this to myself? Why do I even watch the draft? I know we're gonna fuck it up. You know, and then they trade up one spot. He's like, we gave up three more picks to move up one spot. What the hell?
For a guy that would have been there anyway.
He would have been there anyway. The 49ers have said so. They're just like, whoa, they're really going to make this trade with us?
What? They said on NFL Network today that they invited what's the kid's name from Tampa Bay that went to Chicago, the quarterback, tall North Carolina.
Glennon.
They invited Glennon to go to the draft party at Chicago Stadium with all the fans and all. Invited him to go to watch him pick a first-round quarterback. You know, if you're picking a first-round quarterback, why would you do that to him when you just brought him in?
You're going to pay him $18 million.
Yeah, but bring him into the party to say, all right, let's see who they get. Oh, shit.
Give me another shot.
Yeah, and what's even worse is when the head coach is going, oh, shit, what? Apparently Foxy had no idea.
Yeah, he said he didn't learn just right before the draft.
Oh, God. I guess obviously the Bears trading up one spot to get Trubisky was easily the biggest surprise of the top 10, the first round. But I also was surprised to see the Titans take Corey Davis that early. That seems like
feel on that. It just shows that they had a good feel on where people were going, because you look, every other pick after their pick for the next couple of picks were wide receivers, so they couldn't have got him at 18.
They have number 18. You're right. They got the quarterback, Corey Jackson.
Their staff
Nobody
did
had
a good
Corey
job
Jackson of... going in the first round, man. That seemed like a bit of a stretch. But you're right.
Much better kick returner than corner right now.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's an outstanding kick returner. I mean, yeah, he's almost a... Yeah, during the summer, actually, I compared him to Devin Hester, and I'm not gonna say he's gonna be a Hall of Fame level, but he's gonna be an outstanding kick returner, punt returner, kickoff returner, but corner, it's gonna take a while.
When you're as old as I do, you think about Billy White Shoes Johnson when you watch him.
Really?
Yeah. He's quick. I don't think he's as fast as he is quick.
A lot of corners that went the first. Of course, I was shocked Lattimore lasted all the way to the 11th pick to the Saints. They have to be feeling very lucky to have gotten Lattimore. And then that Humphrey kid, he didn't slide like everyone thought he was going to. Actually, I guess the biggest slide was Malik Hooker, who lasted all the way to 15.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reuben Foster to 31.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had a few issues, but with
You could see that one coming.
The thing with Hooker is when it came time for them to pull the trigger on a guy that hadn't got but 1 year of play,
Yeah.
It makes it hard to do that with your first round pick in the top 10.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Bears.
Of course, we did. A lot of people thought Jonathan Allen would slide, and he did. All the way to 17, where the Redskins got him.
I was shocked that my guy Shaquille Griffin went in the third round rather than the fifth or sixth. I was hoping we'd get him in the fifth or sixth. Went in the third round to Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to the Bears, though, my favorite pick in the draft actually went to the Bears in the fourth round, the 119th pick. That's Tariq Cohen. The running back from North Carolina A&T.
Right.
Huh.
Panthers brought him in.
Yes, he was an in-state visit, so he was a freebie. Was hoping beyond hope, but once I figured out the interest in McCaffrey, I was like, yeah, it's not going to happen. But
yeah.
watch him in Chicago, because he's already, from my understanding, slated to be number two on the depth chart behind Jordan Howard. And the interesting factor, even though he's 5'6", and he has a buck 80, he has 10-inch hands. And all the teams that brought him in for private workouts outside of Carolina were cold-weather teams. It was Philly, Chicago, Green Bay, the Jets, and Denver. And those hands – and if you've seen anything on social media, you've seen him doing the backflip catches, the double backflip catch.
Oh, that's him. Okay.
Yes. He ran a 4.4240, but he has shifted. Daniel Jeremiah gave him the nickname the human joystick. And then he also gave him the nickname chicken salad, because he said he made more chicken salad out of more chicken, you know what, than anybody had ever seen.
They were talking about him about his hands too, because he's like 5 foot six. He had hands that were over 10 inches in spread.
Hands 10 inches long, exactly. I was just mentioning that. So, but I said, and that's why cold weather teams were really interested in him. So, he was the all-time leading rusher in the Midwestern Athletic Conference in SCS. He only returned one punt because he was the primary back. And it was this past year on ESPN3. It was and he returned it for a touchdown, but it got called back for a holding penalty. Ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive anyway. But awesome dynamic playmaker, run game and in the passing game. Most folks, he got knocked down to fourth round because of the size, but I was just saying, just watch out, folks.
5'6". He's tiny.
Watch out. That's all I can say, man. Darren Sproles all over.
Yeah, he's a total Darren Sproles type. I'm watching him right now. But, yeah, I see he's got some really nice change of direction.
Yes, he can stop on the dime.
Yeah, he is tough.
So... And we're playing the NFC North this year. So we'll see Tariq.
Yeah,
I think we're playing it. Yep, so we will see Tariq on.
Yeah.
And I don't know about Mr. Biscay, but I think we'll definitely see Cohen.
I don't think the Falcons had a very good draft. They got a couple of decent players. I did like what the Saints did. And the Bucks. Yeah, the Saints got Lattimore, then Ramczyk, then that Marcus Williams, the safety, and then Kamara. They had a good draft.
Yeah, Saints have loaded up on the offensive line. They got Ramczyk. They just drafted Andres Pete. Was that a year or 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
To go with Armstead. So I guess they're going to leave Pete at guard.
Yep.
They're going to protect Drew Brees to the
guys.
To the
we are at the end of the recording. So it's been fun, guys. I appreciate it. We're going to cut it off here, and we'll try it again next week. So watch the blog, and we'll see you around CSR Radio. Appreciate you. Josh,
night,
John, DC, Durst. Appreciate it, y'all.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
Good night.